The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have a few stories from my recent trip to Cuba, a cruise and people behaving badly, dogs, hives, horses, tray tables, turbulence, a survival story, and the night sky. The music for this show I recorded on the streets of Madrid. It was a street performer using some sort of plastic contraption. Let's get on with the show. Okay, so you had a pilot friend.
Right, my pilot friend, his very first week on the job as a chief pilot, he got left alone one night because a gentleman's, either a pilot had died or a pilot's mother had passed away. I can't remember. And so all the chief pilots wanted to go to the funeral, so they left this guy, we'll call him Bill, in charge. And he's just sitting there minding his business. Things are going all right. And he'd literally only been on the job like a day or two. And he gets a phone call from a gentleman that owned one of the hotels where we stayed at.
Oh.
And with the man happened to be Indian. And so with a strong Indian accent, the first thing that Bill hears is, "I do not care that they are naked in the hot tub. I care that they broke my sliding glass doors in the front."
Oh my gosh.
They had gotten shopping carts. Well, they had obviously had adult beverages, but they had gotten shopping carts from the parking lot and were riding around topless. The flight attendants were, I think, pilots pushing them. And they actually, like, they didn't try to break the doors, but I guess they didn't open fast enough and they threw them off their chair. So Bill just literally like got out a company credit card and like gave the number to the man. I was like, "I'm so sorry, please."
I like that. "I don't care that they're naked."
Yeah, he goes, "I do not care that they are naked in the hot tub." Like, that's how Bill tells the story. And I die every time. And I'm like, "Bill, tell the story. Tell the story." So.
In the main cabin now, we have a choice of appetizer along with entree. And I asked this passenger, "And what would you like for your appetizer?" And he said, "I'll have the mosquito." And I was like, you have the what? Because, you know, I think mosquito has been on a menu anywhere. And he meant prosciutto. I was saying that how I'd love to see a dog with a job, like at the airport where they have the dogs that are sniffing out drugs and stuff. And then you had something I thought was quite an interesting take on it.
Yeah, I think that people should consider adopting them, especially those that are in the market for a spouse or a lover or a sugar daddy. Those would make great dogs.
Why? Hey,
because you can just take them out for the walk and they'll sniff the money out. They'll
because they're trained to not, like.
Exactly.
So happy 2020, happy new decade. Well, I started off my new decade with a wah, wah, wah. New Year's Eve. Wake up, scratching. Get up, look in the mirror, and it was like, covered in red welts. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, what is happening? What is going on? And you know, it's New Year's Eve, and I'm not going to be at a doctor's appointment and urgent care. Even if it's open, there's going to be a million people there. And I was like, oh no, what do I do? Thank goodness I didn't have to work. So I took a shower and scrubbed, and I covered myself in hydrocortisone cream. I swallowed Benadryl, few of them, just thinking, bah! You know, the last episode I called it leper legs because I had so many mosquito bites in Cuba. But now I don't know what caused this. So I get online and I'm looking, and like causes of skin irritation. And it said, you know, lots of times it's your laundry detergent or dryer sheets. And I thought, oh, I did change laundry detergent to this natural stuff. Same with the dryer sheets. So I'm like, oh no, get to the store, buy hypoallergenic stuff, wash all the bed linen, wash all the clothes. Cause now I think all my clothes are contaminated that I just washed with all the new wash and everything. So now the first day of the new decade, and I wake up and I'm like, okay. I look like a normal person. All right. Crisis averted. Thank goodness I had a couple days off, because I wake up the 2nd of January, the second day of the new decade, covered in hives, welts, worse than the other day. And I'm like, oh no. Like, I just look like a crazy, like I look like I have a disease, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know what it came from. And I think, okay, well, I gotta get to a doctor. You know, this thing I did didn't work, and it must not be the detergent, because I washed everything. I rewashed everything. So I can't get an appointment with my dermatologist till the next week, which you're not going to wait till then. And I need something now. I'm supposed to work the next day. And I was like, ah. So I go to urgent care. 3 hours. Now, I actually wasn't complaining. A lot of people, when they were complaining, but now you've got days where people, you know, everybody's got the flu, everybody's coughing. I understand. But, you know, I gotta work on my leper body. So I see the doctor, and it was exactly like I thought it was going to be. He said, basically, you're having an allergic reaction. We're going to give you steroids. And I said, but you don't know what caused it. And he's like, no. And it's like, well, then I don't know how to fix it. I didn't do this to him. He's very busy. He's got all those people in the waiting room. But yeah, I'm fixing my bumps, but I don't know what caused the bumps, which means that they could just come back whenever the steroid wears off. And I was trying to think, and I did ask him. I was like, I have that Rent-A-Cat. I'm like, could the cat do it? And he's like, no, unless you're allergic to cats. And I'm like, not that I know of. Hives, 2 days of hives is not the optimal way to start a new decade. I just hope it's not a harbinger of things to come. You worked on a smaller plane?
I did. I worked on a regional jet, and this is the kind of jet that just had one flight attendant. Right. We were doing a turn to Tallahassee, and I had woken up like way too early, and I was barely staying awake because Tallahassee, you don't even serve. Without first class, you really didn't serve. I was dying. We got there a few minutes early, and I told the guys, I said, I'm going to go sit in the first row and take like a 10-minute nap.
Right.
Y'all holler at me when we start boarding. Well, nobody let me know that we were boarding. And about three passengers walked by. I was in 1C with my legs up, asleep. And the only reason why I got woken up is because 1D was like, I'm sorry, I need to get around you. And I woke up and I said, oh my gosh, why didn't the first person wake me?
You're just walking by going, okay.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, she's taking a nap. And I just kept going. And he wasn't going to wake me, except that my legs were in his way. He would have just sat down around me.
In our digital, highly technical world, it's surprising that there are still places in the world that a horse and buggy or horse and carriage is still a legitimate form of transportation and business. Cuba has many forms of horse-drawn transportation. Is it outdated? Is it still practical? Hey, if it's all you have, it's all you have, and it still works. Time might have moved forward, but the past is still alive in a few places.
Wait,
so something weird happened to you?
Yes.
On one of your flights?
Yes, in business class. I was on the cart
And there was this man sitting there just chilling, eating his own boogers to his wife.
Nice.
I had to run to the galley for a second because I thought I was going to lose it.
Sitting in the front?
Yeah.
Oh, very classy.
Yeah. Very classy.
To me, that's grounds for divorce.
So you had another strange passenger?
Yes, he was pleasuring himself in front of another customer that came and complained to us.
So what did you say? Sometimes I like to hear what people say to the...
Actually, at that time, it was before September 11th, and one of the pilots came and talked to him.
And shamed him?
And shamed him, and he was banned from flying forever again.
Hey, cut that out!
I'd like to thank any of you who were so kind when you were going to buy something on Amazon, and, you know, so many of us do. You go to my website, BettyInTheSky.com, and click through, and it doesn't cost you any more, and it supports the show, and I like to see what people buy. And this past month, somebody bought Looney Labs Zombie Flux. Okay. Honest Amish Beard Balm and Prank Pet Sweep. Wrap your real gift in a prank joke gift box. So interesting what people buy. So if you don't mind when you're going to buy something on Amazon, go to my website, BettyInTheSky.com, and I thank you so very much. One of the interesting things about traveling, especially traveling alone or traveling to a developing country, it's just so often things can go from really good to really bad and then back to good again, like that. It's like, wow, you can have some ups and downs. I mean, some days it's like all up, you know, and then you have other days that are more of a challenge. So I was in Cienfuegos, Cuba, and it's a less frequented by tourist town, and it used to be French, and it used to be a whole lot of money there, and I was staying in what I thought was the nicest hotel I stayed at in Cuba, well, Casa Particular, so Airbnb. This was a old mansion, like beautiful, stunning. I think it might be one of the prettiest hotels I've ever stayed in anywhere. And it must have been decorated by an artist because every inch of the place was stunningly beautiful. Like everything, there were all these vintage items. It was, they had like classical music playing. It was, you know how in like colonial times and other parts of like I've seen in Latin cities, they used to have, they used to build a house or mansion or whatever you want to call it surrounding an outside terrace. So the inside of the building is outdoors and like the main function of the place. And then you have the rooms around that. And this where I was staying, the whole block is like one building, kind of like a brownstone is connected, you know, so it's you don't have any space between you and your neighbor. And I couldn't get over how pretty it was. So then I'm out for the day, and I had been going down to walk down to this beach area, kind of a long walk, but I like to walk and I like to stop while I'm walking. So my intention was to walk down there, even though it was quite a distance. And at one point I got pretty hot. So I had taken a bunch of bike taxis at different times. And one time I was taking the bike taxi in Playa Larga, and the guy says to me, "Do you have a picture of the house?" And I'm thinking, I've never been there. I have a picture of the house, you know, because he couldn't find it. We had to ask three people along the way. And like that bike taxi that was quite long was like $3. And then I took that bike taxi where I went all the way like 45 minutes uphill in Trinidad, and I overpaid that bike taxi like $20. I think it was more like $10. So I knew how much bike taxis cost, and I also know that you should negotiate a price before you get in a taxi or anything like that. But I knew I was only going maybe 10 more blocks. So like, how much could it be? $2, $3. So this guy stopped and said, do you want a taxi? And I was like, okay, sure. Because, you know, I was getting hot. And I figured out, you know, he'll make some money and I'll get there a little faster. So I get in the bike taxi. And when we get off, he says, that's $80. And I was like, it is not $80. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's like, it's $80. And you need to pay me $80 now. And I was like, no. I mean, there's no way. The guy was trying to take advantage of me. He was trying to rip me off. And then he starts yelling and screaming at me saying, I'll take you to the police right now. I'll take you to the police. That's how much it costs. I'm like, I took a, you know, a 40-minute bike taxi and paid $20. You can't tell me a 5-minute bike taxi is $80. He's like, that was another city. In this city, that's what it costs. That's what it is. And we're going to the police right now. And he's screaming at me. And now I'm sweating. And it was so uncomfortable. And I needed to get away from him, like, just wanted the whole thing over and was going to overpay and say, look, I'll give you $20, which was like five times the price it should have been. I just needed to get away from this screaming maniac. And he's like, no, it's against, you know, we can't go to the police right now. It's $60. And I'm like, it is not $60. I eventually gave that guy because he would not stop screaming at me. I actually gave him $40. And then I felt really bad about it because I knew he took advantage of me. And yeah, $40 isn't that much to me, but still, you know, it's wrong. Anyway, it was very stressful. I mean, it was not a pleasant situation. And so here I'd gone from staying in this beautiful hotel to now this low point. And then I was walking back, which I wasn't getting back on another bike taxi. And a couple other people who had sort of witnessed it said, you know, it shouldn't have been more than $5. And that guy's crazy. And basically were apologizing to me. And, you know, I got myself calm down and walking back, and I see the lights like on a rooftop restaurant, and I thought, oh, that looks like a nice place. And then there were these really nice musicians, and they were it was the music for a lot of the last previous podcast. And after that, they sat down at my table, these two fun guys, and we talked for like an hour and a half. And then I was on a real travel high because I really enjoyed the conversation and the music and the food. So, you know, I went from that bad getting taken advantage of to now a real nice tourist experience, you know, really talking to the locals. Then I was walking back and I came across a vintage store and I found a license plate that I could buy, an old Cuba license plate. So I was like, score! And so now I'm on this, I'm practically skipping back to my beautiful hotel. I've had a great night talking to the locals. I found my license plate, woohoo! And I get back there and I had to ring the bell and the lady lets me in. And I was like, it's so beautiful in here. And there was a couple, a little bit older than me, couple from Switzerland, and they're sitting there and sulking. And I said, isn't it beautiful in here? It's so pure. It's just so pretty. And the guy says, we don't think it's nice here. And I was like, what? He goes, this is not nice. There is no window in our room. And I was like, well, there's no window because the buildings are connected. So there can't be a window. It'd be like a window into the next house. You know, except for at the front and the back are the only place there could be windows because it's connected to two other buildings. And I kind of was thinking to myself, where do you think you are? And he said, we were told we were having nothing but 5-star accommodations. And this is not a 5-star accommodations. Like they were expecting the Four Seasons. And I said to him, I said, I don't know about your expectations. And I don't know if you know where you are. You know, we're in Cuba. And then they started, because they figured out I was American, and then he started complaining to me about Trump and that how he had ruined their trip. And I didn't really understand. I never really did figure that out because they said they weren't able to fly from the United States to Havana. And I had just flown from the United States to Havana and that Trump had messed up their cruise. And, you know, they're really taking it personally. And I didn't understand because you can still fly from the United States to Havana. So I don't know what all that happened about, but they eventually came over and sat with my table, and we ended up having a really great conversation. We were talking about all sorts of things, international politics, and I think that they ended up having a good time talking to me, and I think that they probably didn't dislike that it wasn't the Four Seasons as much, because they ended up having a very nice evening, and the next morning they were like, good morning, America! So that can just show you both, here's two different travelers' experiences going from a low to a high in a very short amount of time. Many of you know I started my airline career at People Express, and I was listening as I was driving to work on NPR 1A, and here's a story about Whitney Houston and People Express.
The Greatest Love Tour, World Tour, and we were, you know, people think about it as glamorous, but at that time there was an airline called People's Express. And this was when you got your tickets seated on the plane, and they would constantly overbook the plane, and you would get pulled off. So one time it was about, we had about a 40 person entourage, and we got bumped, I don't know how many times. And then we all boarded the plane, and then they asked about half of us to get off, including Whitney.
So they bumped Whitney Houston off a plane?
They bumped her off a plane, and we nicknamed it People's Distress, because really, that's what it was.
Listener Steve Knight sent me a photo of a airline called LATAM, and on landing, you know how we make that PA on landing? Ladies and gentlemen, please use caution when opening the overhead bins, because items may have shifted during takeoff or landing, and we wouldn't want anything to fall out and injure you or anyone around you. Well, the whole freaking overhead bin fell down. The whole damn thing. Ouch!
Hi, I'm Britt, one half of the Traveling House-sitters. My partner and I have spent the last 3 years traveling the world house-sitting. We have one hell of a travel story for you. We purchased an old camper van, a sitch and Berlingo for you car fanatics out there. And yes, it pretty much just is a car with a large boot that we managed to sleep in between all of our European house sits. This camper van took us from Manchester in the UK all the way through France, northern Spain, from the top of Italy to Rome, across to Croatia, through Montenegro, and almost to Greece. We're a little apprehensive of driving to Albania. However, there was nothing to worry about. We're in awe of its beauty and great roads. After 6 hours of driving our camper, we affectionately named Mary Berry, she suddenly turned off and left us stranded in rural Albania. We both pretended to look under the hood like we knew what we were doing, but eventually we decided to head over the road and ask the man manning a fruit shop and a metal workshop. With the help of Google Translate, we managed to let them know what happened. While these gentlemen couldn't get the car going, one of their mates was called. He was a cousin and a mechanic. He came and had a look. However, being a Friday night, he offered to put it in his workshop and have a look in the morning. Our friend offered us a place to stay, but we opted to stay in our van. The next morning, they arrived with coffee and breakfast for us. The mechanic and his crew worked on the car all day. Each time we heard it turn over, our stomachs were in knots. After many people had come by the workshop and offered their help with the car, the mechanic let us know it would require a special part and take another 2 to 3 days to fix. Finally, one of their friends arrived for beers. This guy had great English. We're planning on selling the car once we arrived in Athens, as we're flying to our next destination. So we asked our friend who could speak English if the mechanic was interested in buying the camper. The mechanic was adamant he could get the car going, however, we didn't mind. Plus, we need to be in Greece for our next house sit in 2 days. We offered a price and eventually we came to the deal. We even threw in all our cooking supplies, bedding, table and chairs. It felt like a win-win for everyone. The mechanic now owned an exclusive French camper van and we were free to carry on to Greece. As it was late in the afternoon and buses only ran in the morning to Greece, our friend offered us to host us again. We accepted and headed off to his family home. His mother was incredible. She was so warm and friendly and enjoyed showing us around her beautiful gardens. He took us to the beautiful towns of Korse and Potidek. We then enjoyed an Albanian dinner at his favourite restaurant. That was 2 months ago, and we're still in touch with Bobby and his mother. We do wonder what became of Mary Berry, though. Is she in 1,000 pieces, or is she the prized French car zooming around the Albanian countryside? Would you be interested in house-sitting yourself? It could be in your local city or an exotic place around the world, a villa in Bali or a beachfront house in Australia. We have all the resources you need to get started house sitting over at our website, www.thetravelinghousesitters.com.
I wasn't sure if I should do this story because I don't like stories that are kind of negative or show people in a bad light. But I also want to preface this by saying that you can always have a lot of people that are really smart in one area or like geniuses that aren't as good in like social situations. So, we had this female pilot, and she was new to international, but she'd been flying like 13 years. And So granted, you know, things are different in international and domestic, so let's give her that. But the flight attendants, we all kept thinking, she didn't seem that bright. Well, I mean, or maybe just too timid. I don't know. Let me just tell you a few of the things. So it was time for her crew rest, and you know, I'm busy working, and she comes out of the cockpit, and she said, so are the pillows and blankets in the overhead bin, or are they in the chair? Because they get a first-class seat with a curtain. And I was like, I don't know. You know, you just got to look. Because, I mean, I could go look for her, but she's going to be there anyway, so she can look. Like, why do I have to find out where her pillows and blankets are? So, and later on, I wondered if that wasn't very nice. But it was just like a strange question. Like, we don't tuck them in, you know. We don't have a turndown service for the pilots. So, so that was one thing. And then this was a bigger thing. So we do this thing where we lock off the lavatories for the pilots when they're going to come in and out, just so they don't have to wait for the passengers because they got stuff to do, you know. But what can be a big problem for us and the passengers is that sometimes the pilots will lock it off for them, and then say two or three of them are coming out, they'll lock it off for each other. But if the last pilot locks the door when nobody else is going in there, then we just have a lav that's in op because we don't know there's nobody in there, and then nobody gets to use it, and the lines, you know, pile up, and then finally we think, you know, nobody's come out of there in a long time, so then we have to, nobody wants to open up a locked lavatory door because you don't know what you could find, you know, like it's dangerous. So it's a big problem if the pilots make that mistake. So we didn't realize, and she's new, granted, got to give her that, she's new to this. She had locked off, and we didn't realize till landing when we're like thinking somebody's in there, and then we realize that the lav has been locked off for an hour and a half. And, you know, as a passenger, you know, those lavatories are valuable. You know, there's only so many of them, and we need every one. So another flight attendant decided that she would tell her, because she needs to know. You know, she's like, hey, you know, if you're the last pilot used in the lavatory, you can't lock it off because then nobody can use it. And she and we think that's a very easy concept. And this pilot's looking at her like, why not? And it's like, well, because then nobody can use the lavatory. So the pilot the next day told us that she had said to him, I still don't understand why I can't leave the lavatory locked. And it's like, okay. Now, granted, like I was saying before, you can have geniuses that aren't that good at social skills. So I'm not saying that she's a dumb person or she's not a good pilot. I'm not saying any of that. But then I had met them for happy hour. I didn't go to dinner with the crew. And the flight attendants the next day were like, oh my gosh, it comes time to pay the bill for dinner. And she took out a $20 bill, a U.S. dollar, $20 bill. We were in Spain. And they all were looking at her like, huh? Because granted, okay, she hadn't flown international, but has she ever not gone anywhere? You know, she's had flight privileges. Who knows? Give her the benefit of the doubt. But they said, you can't use dollars here. And she's like, why not? And they're like, because we're in Spain. You can't use dollars anywhere in Europe. And she's like, oh, I thought I had read that you could use dollars. Now, granted, maybe she did see something somewhere. But we were saying, you know, can you imagine? Like, I was just in Cuba where the currency is a CUC, C-U-C. Can you imagine me going into, you know, Five Guys Burgers and pulling out like a $10 CUC and trying to pay for my burger? You know, it would just never work.
Yeah, back when I used to be based in Boston, we had a professional hockey player coming back from Amsterdam one time.
Fine.
He was super excited to be on there, and
he was super excited to be on there?
Yeah, he was super excited to be on, but he was stuck in the main cabin. But yeah, we were all super excited that he was on there.
Correct. And he's got giant long legs.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're like, you know what? We have a fan seat.
Wow.
We're going to upgrade him because he's a big celebrity. We really love him. He was in the main cabin for takeoff, so he was back there chatting with us. We're so excited. We gave him a beer.
Yeah.
We're super excited about it. And then, you know, he's kind of known on the plane who he is. Well, he got to drinking, and next thing we know, he's standing above his seat, dangling his arms over. Come to find out, he had taken an Ambien,
oh,
but there were people recording him, so we had to move him to the back of the plane. next thing we know,
so he's gonna embarrass himself. Like,
oh
yeah,
yeah. And he didn't remember any of it. And then come to find out, one of the air marshals told us that he was underage, so we had to stop serving him.
He was underage?
Yeah, we thought he was a professional athlete.
Yeah, how
we thought he was
old enough.
Yeah, we thought he was old enough. He asked us for a beer. We didn't think to ask.
Right.
Yeah, oh God. It turned. Come to find out, we ended up taking, when he came back awake, he took a picture with us. And he was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
But he was so sweet about it, but it was just like this crazy thing that happened.
I call them Ambien zombies.
Oh God, they're the worst.
This comes from listener Franklin Amadeus, and he sent me an article from the Atlantic Mirror titled, "This Flight Attendant Plunged to the Earth from 33,000 feet, but somehow she lived to tell the tale." On January 26, 1972, a JAT Flight 367 had just taken off from Copenhagen Airport in Denmark. It's on a routine flight from the Danish capital to Belgrade in what was called the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. On board is 22-year-old flight attendant Vesna Volvovic, who's only been flying for 8 months, but in about 45 minutes, her life will change forever. In fact, Volvovic was only in Copenhagen waiting to join Flight 367 because of a mix-up. I shouldn't have been there at all. It was a different Vesna that should have been rostered with that crew. A little mistake, however, meant that I had my first trip to Denmark, Volvovic told Greenlight. And Flight 367 arrived at Copenhagen Airport at 2:30 p.m. on January 16, 1972, without a hitch. Volvovic and her four colleagues then boarded the aircraft, a McDonnell Douglas DC-9, replacing the current crew. It only had 23 passengers and were flying to Yugoslavia that day. Less than 30 people were on board the aircraft. With that light load, then, the plane took off at 3:15 p.m. Just 46 minutes later, at 4:01 p.m., disaster struck. The plane was now over Czechoslovakian airspace and cruising at a height of 33,000 feet when there was a catastrophic explosion in the baggage hold. And the force of the explosion tore the plane into three pieces, with the wreckage plummeting to the earth. The stricken DC-9 smashed to the ground. Tragically, the captain and 26 of the crew and passengers all died instantly. The last person on board the aircraft miraculously survived the terrible crash. A villager heard screams coming from the devastated plane and happened upon the shattered body of the flight attendant. Incredibly, she was still alive, although she was covered in blood. Fortunately for her, the villager who found her served as a medic in World War II, and he was able to keep her breathing until the first responders arrived on the scene. The damage to her body included a fractured skull, three vertebrae fractures, two broken legs, a number of broken ribs, and a fractured pelvis, as well as temporary paralysis. Perhaps fortuitously, the flight attendant spent some time in a coma. When she awoke, she had no memory of the accident or the weeks that followed it. In fact, later she claimed that she remembered nothing of the terrible drama for quite some time. "I had amnesia from 1 hour before the accident until 1 month afterwards," she recalled. "The first thing I can remember is seeing my parents in the hospital." In fact, at first she learned of the accident was 2 weeks after it happened when doctors showed her a newspaper. At the sight of the headline, she fainted. But how on earth had she survived an explosion at 33,000 feet and the resulting fall to the earth? Well, investigators were later to credit her near-miraculous survival to the fact that she'd been pinned inside a section of the aircraft by a meal cart. Conversely, other passengers and crew had been sucked out of the depressurized plane and plunged to their deaths. She was saved by a meal cart! And the section of the fuselage where she was trapped had come to rest on a densely forested and snowy mountain slope. Luckily, the snow and the trees had lessened the force of the crash landing. The day after Flight 367 was destroyed, a man describing himself as a Croatian nationalist phoned a Swedish newspaper and claimed that his group had planted a bomb on the flight. Yet, although no one was ever arrested for the bombing, the mystery man's explanation was accepted by the authorities, but not by everyone. In 2009, for instance, two Czech journalists claimed that Flight 267 67 was brought down accidentally by a Czech Air Force plane. However, there were only circumstantial evidence to back up their assertion. In any case, the Guinness World Book of Records continues to list Vulvovic as the survivor of the longest descent without a parachute. I was talking a little bit about how quickly things can go from bad to good or good to bad when you're traveling, especially if you're traveling someplace that's not as tourist friendly. Okay, so I was in Playa Larga and I had that bike taxi that we could barely find the place that I was staying, and I had walked into town, and then I ended up getting some dinner, and now it's dark, and I thought, okay, well, I might have some trouble. And all the bike taxis, I did notice I was there a few days. They were there during the day, and then at night, there didn't seem to be any taxis or bike taxis, so I didn't really have a choice as to just walking home. And I did have, luckily, one of my Casa Particulars, and some listeners have suggested, and I'll probably do this every time from now on, like maps.me, where you can download a map ahead of time so you can use a GPS when you don't have cell service, because there was no cell service in, there was no cell service in Cuba. So now I've got my maps, and I'm hoping it's going to be right, because it's not always right in some of these places either. And so I'm walking, and it's dark, and I just have my little cell phone, and I'd only been in Cuba for like 4 days at that point. You don't know how safe it is. And I'm thinking, I don't know if this is smart. I don't know if I should be walking when in the pitch dark by myself. I mean, I know how to get back, and I was a little worried. It turned out that place was very safe. But the very next night, after I'd had a great day going to the cave and the cenote and snorkeling, and I had had dinner, and now I'm walking home. And, you know, the night before, I was so nervous about being dark, and did I know where I was going? And so what a difference a day can make. So the very next night, I'm walking there were street lights, but they were all burnt out in this one section. So it was dark, dark, dark. And that's where I had been nervous the night before. So then the second night, all of a sudden, I realized, look, because those street lights were burnt out, and because you're in a little town in Cuba out in the middle of nowhere, and next to a national park where there's no lights whatsoever, the night sky was lit up. Like, I don't know if everyone in the world has seen a really beautiful night sky, but it'll take your breath away. I could see the Milky Way. So I turned my cell phone off. There was, you know, showing my way back, and I was just stood there looking up, and I was like, wow. You know, it just shows how small we are and how big the universe is and how much beauty there is just in the darkness. So here one night I was afraid for my own safety. And the next night I stood out there probably for a half an hour, intentionally in the dark, staring at the beautiful, glorious night sky. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. And I will be doing some traveling if all goes well. I'm hoping to go to this little island called Saba. It looks like Saba, S-A-B-A. You've probably seen it. It's in a lot of movies as kind of like an exotic island. Not that many people go there. There aren't any beaches there. So many people don't go there, or so many people haven't heard of it, that earlier in the episode I was talking about such a good idea to download the maps.me in case you don't have cell service. Well, Saba isn't in maps.me. But hopefully I'm going there, and I'll tell you all about it in the next episode. Thanks. Bye.
When you drive the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power, you can stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see yourself behind the wheel of the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Kia received the fewest reported problems among all brands in the J.D. Power 2022 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study based on 2019 models. See jdpower.com/awards for 2022 details.